Welcome to Perspective Transformation Radio, enjoying its 10th anniversary, often the number one live airing broadcast on Blog Talk Radio, and reaching a global audience of over 185,000 listeners. During this hour-long interview-style program, you'll meet perspective transformers who come to share their most pivotal, life-changing insights and aha moments, offering you instant access to life, leadership, and God-loving seismic shifts of your own. We encourage you to invite friends to join you here now or share quotes with attribution, and also reach out to our sponsor, womenspeakers.com. Womenspeakers.com is the most popular online connecting place for Christian event planners and Christian women speakers since 2002. I'm your host, Marnie Swedberg, and I encourage you to grab a notepad and get ready to meet today's perspective transformer. Welcome, welcome. This is Marnie. Excited to have you with us today, along with our guest, Tricia Brown. We're going to be talking today about grief. There's more to the story. And during this hour, you're going to discover that there are two very different types of grief. There's one big thing that can complicate grief. You'll understand what grieving women have in common with women from the book of Judges, the three biblical ways to help you better handle grief, how the five W's and H of story writing can help you restrain difficult emotions, and the important difference between restraining and denying them, the most difficult people to respect and why respect during grief matters, six practical things to remember when dealing with grief, tips for friends and family of those who are grieving, and what to do when your story doesn't end the way you want. Our guest today is Tricia Brown. She's a writer, speaker, and grieving mother. She's the owner of the Girls Get Together, where she shares stories of life, loss, and laughter, encouraging women to grow closer to Jesus and each other. Her website is thegirlsgettogether.com. Welcome to you, Tricia.
Thank you for having me, Marnie.
Well, I'm so excited to have you here, and this is not a topic that is maybe fun, but it is necessary, and there is grief that comes all through life. There's major griefs, and there's minor grief, but what we're going to be talking today about is how to proceed through whatever grief you're walking through at the time. And maybe before we begin, Tricia, if you would just take like a couple minutes and tell us about, you know, during the intro, I said you were a grieving mother. Could you just tell us a little bit of that story?
Sure. I'm a mother of four sons, and that range in age from 15 to 23. Last year, on September 18th, 2018, my 20-year-old son, Brandon, was killed in a car wreck. And the process of going through this past year of grief has changed me in a way that, I'll never be the same. And it's changed my outlook on my writing, and it's changed my outlook on my speaking. Before that, the majority of my career had been spent pursuing other people's dreams, writing on assignment and helping them achieve their dreams. And since that time, I've realized that life is very short, and I want to share my message and the stories that God has given me to help other women.
So beautiful. Thank you for, thank you for your willingness to do that and to be here and to share some insights that you've learned with us. We have a lot of ground to cover today, so I want to just dive right in. You talk about that there are two very different types of grief. So what would those two things be?
Well, when we look at grief, as any type of sorrow, there's lots of things that we grieve over in this world. But it, generally speaking, you can look at grief in from two perspectives. It's either expected or it's unexpected. We have griefs that are, if your job it has been having cutbacks, and then you walk in and you get a pink slip, and you kind of expected that. And you're going to grieve it, but you still expected it. When your parents grow old, you expect that they'll die before you. You expect that you will die before your children. If someone has a terminal illness, you expect that they will probably die sooner than later. But that doesn't make those types of grief easy. It just means that you have a little more time to prepare for them. Then there's the unexpected types of grief. And the unexpected types of grief are anytime you lose a child, nobody ever expects that to happen. When you have a tragic accident, those types of grief are just blindsiding. You know, you just feel like they hit you out of nowhere. And so, in general, most types of grief can be classified as one of those two.
And there's one thing in particular that you feel complicates grief. What would that be?
Well, again, you know, depending on the type of grief that you have, there are lots of different things that can complicate grief. But in typically speaking, the primary complication is guilt. We have so many things when we lose someone that we love that we regret. That we regret things that we said, we regret things that we did, we regret things that we didn't say or that we didn't do, and then we feel guilty that we didn't do enough. And, you know, when you have family members who commit suicide, guilt plays a large part. When you have family members that die under complicated circumstances, like my sons, the guilt is just... it can be overwhelming. We battle should haves and would haves and could have beens. And if we're not careful, that guilt can actually keep us from processing our grief and moving on with our lives.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. And see exactly how that would be. You want to talk to us about the women in the book of Judges, about the grieving women in the book of Judges. So that's the first time I've thought of that set of words together. So tell us about that.
Yeah, I have to give you a little bit of a backstory on that, because in the year, the January prior to Brandon's death, God had led me to the book of Judges. And I had began reading through it, and it's kind of a tough book. You know, it's a tough book to relate to in a lot of ways. But I began studying and I began formulating this this lesson on the women from the book of Judges, because the book of Judges is actually full of women. And as I did that, I was preparing for a class, but that class fell through. And so I put that aside and I didn't think about it anymore until well after my son died. And in the months after my son died, a word came to me, and it was the word W-O-E-S, woes. And now, Marnie, did you ever watch Hee-Haw on television growing up?
Maybe.
Well, when I heard the word woes, when I think about the word woes, I thought of that Hee-Haw song that said, gloom, despair, and agony on me, deep, dark depression, excessive misery. If it weren't for bad luck, I'd have no luck at all. Gloom, despair, and agony on me. Well, that word, that song really is a good definition of what woes is. But God began to impress upon me that what he was talking about was woes, women of earthly sorrows. And he reminded me of all those women that I had been studying in the book of Joshua. And those women are women just like us. They came from a very different culture and a very different background, but they're women just like us. They're women, they're wives, they're mothers, they're friends, and they experienced their own set of hardships and loss and tragedy. And so when I looked at those women and compared them to our lives, what I realized is they often suffered from consequences of actions that weren't their own. They often dealt with circumstances that were beyond their control. And they were often left with conclusions that were less than they desired. And that's how we are in what we have in common with these women from the book of Judges.
Wow. Can you name a couple of them for us just so we have an idea of who we're thinking about?
Yeah. Three particular women were Aksa. She was the daughter of Joshua. And, not Joshua, Caleb. She was the daughter of Caleb, who had been one of the two spies. Caleb was one of the two spies who had come back to Moses, and he had encouraged the Israelites to go in and take the promised land. But as we all know, they didn't do that. So Aksa, along with the rest of the Israelites, had wandered for 40 years in the desert as a result of decisions that she really had little control over. And then in Joshua, we find that she was being given away as kind of a grand prize at a best warrior contest. Another one was Jael. And Jael was married to a very difficult man who actually took her away from her tribe and her people. And then he went on to kind of aid and abet the enemies of God's people and left her alone to confront one of the commanders of the enemies, the army of God's enemies. And then there was Jephthah's daughter, whose story is very sad. She's not even named by name. But she was the daughter of a warrior, and all she did was celebrate her father's success, and she wound up losing her life as a result. So those were three specific women that really touched me and their stories.
Thank you. Yeah, I was having a hard time to even remember who were the women in Judges, but those are awesome, awesome stories to contemplate. And I know that you have found three biblical ways to help handle grief. Can you just start with the first one?
Sure. And I will say that these also come from my study of these women in Judges. They were ways that I found that they reacted to grief, the grief of their life. The first one was that they restrained their emotions. Proverbs 25:28 tells us that a man, or in our case, women, without self-control, you know, are like broken walls into a city. It's like a city that the walls are broken down and it's left unguarded. And so I think that one of the biblical ways that we can handle our grief is by restraining our emotions.
Yeah. And then what's the second one?
I'm sorry, the second one?
Yeah.
Is that what you asked?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, I'm sorry. The second one is they reacted respectfully. 1 Peter 2:7 says, you know, respect everyone. And grief, it's hard when you're grieving, and it's hard because you get angry. And in that anger, it can be very easy to be disrespectful. And one of the things that I saw with these women in Judges was that even in their times of grief, they acted and reacted very respectfully. Aksa, who I told you was a given away as a prize to the best warrior kind of thing, when that happened to her, she still had enough respect for her father that she got off of her animal to, and as he approached to ask from him of a gift, but she wanted to do it respectfully. And Jael, whose husband didn't seem to take into consideration her feelings about anything, still acted respectfully. Even when she was approached by the enemy, she treated him with respect in order to gain his trust. And then Jephthah's daughter never once questioned her father or acted disgracefully towards him, even though he made a very, very unwise decision that cost her life. And so we can restrain our emotions, and we can also react respectfully.
Yeah. And what is the third one?
And the third one's the hardest of all. The third one is that we need to relinquish the results. A lot of times, and we'll talk about it more here, I'm sure, in the next few minutes, but our stories don't end the way that we want them to end. And we have to relinquish the results to the Lord, even when things don't go the way that we had hoped. And also with these three women, that was the way that they did. They all relinquished the results to the one who ultimately has control, which is God. And when we're grieving, I think that's an important part of, at least it's been an important part of my healing, is to give the results to the Lord.
I think it's so important in every way to do that, and maybe especially when grieving, but just even, you know, when we share our faith with someone and they don't respond, mm-hmm. when we give a gift to someone and they throw it back at us, you know, whatever it is, to relinquish the result of what we're doing, you know, to give them truly from the heart to God, and then to relinquish the result. And I think in grieving, that has to, like you say, it's probably the hardest one, but it's definitely the most important one. Because otherwise, you just spend your whole life wondering what you did wrong and how you can go back, and you can't.
That's right. That's right.
Mm.
One of
did,
the
did you have a follow up thought there? Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say too that all of this, all three of them tie in together. They all are. Each impacts the other, but you know, when we look at restraining our emotions. Some people might hear that and be put off by it, because women, we tend to be emotional creatures, but I'm not saying that we need to deny our emotions.
Right.
Restraining is very different from denying. I always think of it in terms of like an equestrian, a horseback rider. She doesn't just let her horse run all over the place, you know, she bridles her horse. And I think that's what we have to do with our emotions, is that we don't deny how we feel and we don't pretend that our emotions don't exist, but we can't allow those emotions to control who we are or what we do. And so I think that in order to act respectfully, we have to be able to restrain our emotions. And in order to be able to relinquish the results, we have to be able to react respectfully. I think it's all tied in one to another. But I think mm-hmm. it's very important, because if we don't do these things, if we don't restrain our emotions will restrain us. In grief especially, it is so hard. I've grieved before in my life. I've lost people I loved, but the loss of my son has been a type of grief that I've never experienced until now. And it is so easy to just give in to those, to those negative feelings, to the anger, to the grief, to allow those to become who I am, or allow myself to become that. And so I just believe that those three things are very, very hard, but I feel like they're essential to my healing process.
Now, you have been a writer for a long time, and as you've journeyed through this year, you've found that story writing could help both restrain the difficult emotions. So talk to us about the five W's and H of story writing, and how that can help.
Okay, sure. When I began contemplating speaking about the story of my son and what had happened, there was a lot to his life and his death that weren't readily apparent to most people. A lot had went on before he died that most people, even people very close to us, had no idea. And so even at the funeral home, when people were lining up to talk to me, I remember saying to some people, there's so much more that you don't know. There's more to the story. Mm-hmm. And so as I began contemplating on speaking about this, that was what kept coming up again and again. There's more to the story. And following along with that theme, I found that if you go back to the basics of story writing, you know, the W's mm-hmm. and the H, which is a who, what, when, where, and why, and how. And I found that there are specific questions that I can ask myself using that process that has helped me as I've gone through this. First of all, if you're grieving, you can ask yourself, who are you? To whom do you belong? And that sounds like such a basic question, but it's something that I have to remind myself of when I am in the throes of grief, I have to remind myself that my name is Tricia Brown, that I'm a wife, that I'm a mother, that I'm a daughter, that I am most importantly a daughter of the King, that I belong to Christ. Because when I remind myself of those things, then I'm reminding myself of more, that my identity is not found in my grief. And then I have to ask myself, not only who are you, but I have to ask, what has God asked me to do, and what has he wisely not asked me to do? And this goes back again to that guilt that we were talking about,
mm-hmm.
because when you're grieving, you think of all the things that you might have been able to do to have changed the story. Mm-hmm. And when you ask yourself, what has God asked me to do, then you realize, okay, this is what I was able to do, whether I messed up with it or not, but this is what God had to do, or God, and this is how he chose to work all of this out. And, you know, I realized very quickly with my son's death that there were things that I could control and there were a lot of things that I couldn't control. And I couldn't mm-hmm. control that his car hit that tree that night and mm-hmm. that he died. But so you ask, who are you and what has God asked you to do? And then you ask, when did you give your heart to Jesus? Because reminding yourself, going back to Jesus is always so important. Just thinking about Jesus. And, you know, sometimes all we can do is call out the name of Jesus. I remember sitting on the couch that night that when we got the word, and my mom and my sisters had gathered by that time. And I remember a time when one of us, I don't even remember who, just started saying the name of Jesus out loud.
Right.
And we just started calling on Jesus. So ask yourself, who are you and what has God asked you to do? When did you give your heart to Jesus? Look for places where you can find ways to thank God and praise him. Where can you find ways to thank God and praise him? Because there's always somewhere, even in the midst of really difficult circumstances, there's always somewhere that you can thank God. So who, what, when, where, why? But, you know, that's what we always want to ask is why. But what we should ask is why not us? Instead of asking why did this happen to me, I have to ask why not me? I mean, even Jesus suffered on earth.
Right.
Am I beyond what he went through? So ask who, what, when, where, why not you? And then the last question is the H, the how. How can you make sure that your reactions to this circumstance propel you forward and don't hold you back? So those are the who, what, when, where, why, and how that I've used to help with my grieving process.
Well, I'm taking notes. Notes as we're going here is so good. I love all of it. The what has God asked me to do and what hasn't he asked me to do? And I think that this is, again, this is like a basic principle. I was just coaching with somebody this morning, and we were talking about how God gives us enough light for the path, the lamp to our feet, the light for the path. And that isn't everything that's going to ever happen in your future from this day forward. That's just like enough for right now. What has he called you to do now, today? And you don't have to figure out that huge looming future that seems mm-hmm. just, you know, did you come up with a way, have you come up with a way to think about the future like that has been helpful to you?
Can you repeat the question?
Sure. Have you come up with a way to think about the future, like your future years on earth without Brandon? Have you come up with a way to think about it that's been helpful to you? I'm going to let you think a minute let me respond while you're thinking a moment there.
Okay.
So when my dad passed away, I was very much a daddy's girl, and my dad died suddenly of a heart attack, and it's very mm-hmm. shocking. And one of the things that really helped me, I asked my son, I said, can you help me figure out if a day is 1,000 years and 1,000 years is a day? And if I live to be 70, how long till I get to see my dad again?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he just figured out and he goes, I don't know, but it's less than an hour. So, and I remember that just being really comforting to mm-hmm. just to reframe it in my mind when I would think about living the rest of my whole life on earth without my dad. You know,
mm-hmm.
I could think, but I'm going to see him in a couple of minutes. It's just really a couple of minutes. That helps a lot.
Mm-hmm. I remember thinking those same thoughts. I remember thinking I have to live the rest of my life like this. And unfortunately, when I was thinking of that, it was in those first few hours after finding out about his death, and the pain was so overwhelming that I just remember thinking, how can I possibly endure this for the rest of my life? And I think that the best way, first of all, I have to say that I try not to think too much about the future as in terms of years, because in those, the initial moments, the initial weeks, the initial months, even it's been a little over a year now, and I feel like I'm still trying to just take one day at a time.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think, I try not to think too far ahead, but Romans 12:2 tells us that we should let God transform us into new women by changing the way we think. And that's been instrumental for me in this grieving process, in knowing how to move forward, whether it be 1 second at a time or one day at a time or 1 week or 1 year. In the immediate aftermath, God gave me Psalm 19:14, which is kind of an odd verse for someone who's grieving. It's not a verse that you would think of, but it says, may the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart be pleasing in your sight, O Lord, my rock and my redeemer. And for months, I would walk around quoting that, and I had it on my phone. I still have it on my phone, and I would pull it up. And the reason why was because when I found my thoughts going to such negative places, which can happen so easily when you're grieving, when you're missing somebody so badly, and you hurt so badly, that the only thing I could do is quote that verse, because God doesn't just say the words of my mouth. He says the meditation of my heart. He wants the way that I think to be transformed, to be changed. And so that's the process that God's working on me with through my grief, is that as I look forward and I try to think about Brandon, instead of thinking about how much I miss him, I try to think about what he's doing in heaven now.
Hmm.
Instead of trying to think about all the things that he missed here on earth, I try to think about what has he gained there, what has he seen that's new. And that's not easy. It's so easy to be just pulled back into that vortex of sorrow. Mm-hmm. But that's how I'm moving forward, is just by changing the way that I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the meditation of your heart. I love that. So you mentioned earlier in the program, and we're going to circle back around to this, the respect piece again. You say that there are some people that are difficult to respect, but why respecting them during grief matters. Can you tell us what you're thinking there?
Yeah, and it goes also back to the anger, because I think that at least for me, the reason it's difficult to respect people comes back to being angry with them. And sometimes when we're grieving, and this is different for every person, but I would almost venture to say that anger is a part of every person's grief to some extent. But, you know, it varies who you're angry with. You know, sometimes you're angry because you'll start thinking about people that disappointed the person that you loved, you know, or they did something to the person that you loved when they were alive, and all of a sudden you get angry with them. But I think the hardest thing is that we get angry at ourselves, going back to the guilt. We get angry at the person who's passed away, and we get angry at God. Mm-hmm. And when we are angry with ourselves, when we're angry with the person who passed away, or when we're angry with God, all of those that kind of anger bars the door to our healing. And it's hard to move forward and heal from grief if you cannot treat yourself respectfully. And obviously, if you can't treat God respectfully, and if you can't treat others respectfully. So for me, as I've dealt with that, I've had to admit that people aren't perfect. There are people in Brandon's life that I think I get mad because I get mad at people who didn't text him enough or call him enough. You know, maybe his friends. I get mad sometimes because Brandon, he went to a counselor, and I think, well, the counselor didn't fix him, and so I get mad at him. I get mad at my husband who tried reprimanding Brandon that night. I get mad at myself because of mistakes that I made. One thing that has been very difficult was that Brandon left the house that night very angry. He was in a rage, and I had the opportunity to get in the car with him, and I got in the car with him, and we drove to a park, and I spoke with him for a few minutes. I even prayed with him, and then he said something that kind of frustrated me, and I asked him to take me home, and he drove me back home, and when we pulled up to the house, I thought we would both get out, and he didn't want to get out, and I said, Brandon, come on in, and he said no, and after 2 or 3 minutes of going back and forth, I got out of the car and I left my son that night. And he pulled away and he drove off. And that was the last time that I saw my son on this earth. So I have had a hard time, still have a hard time forgiving myself for that. And I have a hard time respecting myself for that. But this is something that God is really been working on me, and he's still working on me, because we have to admit that nobody's perfect. None of the people in Brandon's life were perfect. I'm not perfect. And, you know, we all live with different regrets. So we have to admit that we're not perfect. They're not perfect. I'm not perfect. We have to forgive them for the wrongs, either wrongs that they committed or that we think they committed. It doesn't really matter if it just matters that we forgive them, and we have to choose to love them. And like I said, that has been the most difficult when it comes to me, when it comes to myself.
Well, Jesus, we just want to pause right here and invite you into the broken places in our hearts where we feel like we've failed, or we feel like others have failed, or that you have failed us. And that forgiveness and respect are hard to apply. We just ask for help with this, that you would give us the courage and the faith and the willingness to extend forgiveness today, in this moment, tomorrow, and the next day, the next week, and the next year, as thoughts come back, and that we would receive the beautiful healing and forgiveness that you paid for on the cross. And that we would apply that and receive the benefit and the joy of it to our lives. And thank you for Tricia. Thank you for her willingness to be so vulnerable with us. And I pray that you would continue to heal her heart as well, and every listener who is suffering. In Jesus' precious name, amen.
Amen.
Well, I just am hugging you. And you listeners, too, are feeling the sadness and dealing with the anger and the other really strong emotions that come with grief, just know that you are so loved by God. He's so loved, and he's with you every moment. I want us to go ahead. You have a thought there?
I do, because I also want to mention that a lot of times people who are grieving get angry at God.
Mm-hmm,
and
sure.
We don't know how, a lot of times people don't know how to handle that, that they're angry with God. But, you know, 1 Peter 5:7 tells us to give all our worries and care to God because he cares for us. And I just want to encourage grievers to know that God knows what you're feeling anyway. Don't be afraid to tell him. and don't be afraid to talk to him. You know, he knows how you feel, and he can handle whatever it is that you need to say to him. But also remember that God is God, and that we're not God, and that when we're finished, when we're finished ranting and raving and crying our hearts out to him, that we need to be ready to listen to him, because he'll speak to grievers. I feel like he has spoken to me during my grief in ways that he never spoke to me before. Not that he never spoke to me before, but he's spoken to me in new ways that he never spoke to me before.
Yeah, no, that's really true. And I don't know, for myself, I've found that anytime I'm angry, it always comes back to, at least for me, it always comes back to that I'm really, truly angry with God at the bottom of it all. When I get down to the bottom, the root source of it, I'm angry at myself, or I'm angry at others, or I'm angry at life or whatever. But in the end, I have to just recognize that I'm really ticked at God because he's not doing it my way. He didn't let me have it the way I wanted it. And that just makes me mad. And that's just something I have to deal with all the time too. So for sure.
And I love
the Psalms for that. David was one of God's favorites. He just always compared the other kings to David. You know, this was good king, but not as good as David, or this was a lousy king, nothing like King David. You know, he's always comparing the other kings to David. But what he really loved about David was his authenticity. David just really loved God, but he was really, really honest. If he didn't like something, he'd just say it straight out. And he knew that God already knew, you know, and so I think that honesty is huge. Tricia, you have 6 practical things that we can remember when dealing with grief. Can you just give us the first one or two?
Sure. The first thing is that to remember you're not alone. Grief is a very lonely thing, and it can feel like a deep hole that you're being buried alive. But no matter what the circumstances are that surround your personal form of grief, you're not alone. There are people who have also been there, who've went through it before you, but more importantly, God is with you. So first of all, remember, I have to remind myself of these things, because you don't always feel them. But it's not about what we feel, it's about what we know. And so remember, you're not alone. The second thing is, you're not going to forget. There is this fear that I'm going to forget Brandon, that I'm going to forget what he looked like, that I'm going to forget what he sounded like, that I'm going to somehow or another, that I'm going to just forget him, and that other people are going to forget him. But I promise, you won't forget him. I won't forget my son. You won't forget the person that you loved. I've known people who have lost loved ones years and years and years ago, and you don't forget. God gives us, the ability to hold them close in our heart. And then the third one is, and this is a repeat of what we've already said, but just another reminder, you can control your reactions. We cannot control our reality, but we do have the ability to control our reactions. So those are the first 3 things.
I want to go back to the first one. You're not alone. So I remember reading a Norman Cousins quote about this, that there's nothing as lonely as grief, because even if someone else goes through, for example, for you, your husband and your other boys, that went through the same loss that you did, except that it wasn't the same. It isn't the same. No one can ever go through it just like you did.
That's right.
And that's, I think that in it, and I remember resonating with that, and just that felt so true to me, that other than Jesus, there's really nobody that can fully understand, which is why a lot of times when people try to say that, I so understand what you're going through. It kind of hurts, because while it's a loving gesture and they can understand part of what you're feeling, no one can ever really understand what you're going through except for Jesus.
Yes, I totally agree. No one can understand exactly, but they can still be there. You know, they can still, their presence. I recently joined some Facebook groups for grieving parents. And I've almost I've only been a part of them for like a week or so, and I've almost backed out of them several times because it's very hard to be a part of that group because every day is a constant reminder. But one of the things that is spoken to me is how similar the thoughts are that they're posting. Every one of us has different circumstances. Some of them have lost babies before they were even born. Some of them have lost children who were, you know, on up into midlife. Some of them, their children had disabilities. Some of their children took their own life. All of us have differences. But the one thing that those groups have served to help me remember is that I'm not alone, though. You know, there are other people. My grief will never be their grief, and their grief will never be my grief. But I'm not alone in grieving. And, you know, that shouldn't comfort us, and in a lot of ways it doesn't, because, like, I don't want to be comforted by somebody else's grief. But there's comfort in knowing I'm not the only one who's suffered and who's suffering. Does that make sense?
Right, and it's a biblical principle, you know, that there's nothing new under the sun, that you'll never go through something that's just unique to you. And also on the converse, that everything that we do go through that is painful and causes growth in us can be used for the benefit of others as well, you know, so it's both sides of that. So the first one is you're not alone. The second one is you're not going to forget them. The third one is you can control your emotions. What are 4, 5, and 6?
You are stronger than you think is number 4. God tells us in his word that we can do all things through Christ who strengthens us. And it's terrible to think about having to be strong. Nobody wants to be strong, but you are stronger than you think you are. You will be able to, I don't know how to express this. I don't want to say that, you know, because people misinterpret this. You think, well, if being strong is why God allowed me to go through this, I don't want to go through it. That's not what I'm trying to say. I'm just trying to say that with God, you can do more than you think that you can. You can get through it. Number 5 is your life will never be the same, though. Grief changes you in a way that it, especially when it's someone very close to you, that you can't go back. Life is not going to be the same. I remember standing when I was at the casket of my son. I saw a friend coming down the aisle, and as soon as I saw her face, there was a look of recognition. I've known this woman for years now. But when I looked in her eyes, I saw something that I had not seen before. And I'm sure she saw something that she had not seen before, because she had lost a daughter who was 10 years old, many, many years earlier before I'd ever known her. And there was this sense of recognition. Okay. And she said to me, I wish I could tell you that it's going to get better, that it's going to all go away. It won't, but it will get a little better. She said, I wish I could tell you that it's all going to go away, but it will get a little better. It changes. Your life changes. You have a new reality. And it's okay, because even though my life's never going to be the same, that doesn't mean that my life is not going to be satisfying. It will be different. It will take time. But with the Lord's help, I'm confident that not only I, but that anybody who's grieving, that we can love and laugh again, and that we can live full, meaningful lives even after grief, even after tragedy. Yeah. And so you're stronger than you think, and your life will never be the same, but it can still be satisfying, and you must keep breathing. And I know that sounds crazy, but number 6 is you must keep breathing. When in the hours after we got the word that my son had died, my house filled up with people. I mean, it was like I closed my eyes 1 second, and I opened my eyes, and there were just lots of people there. And one of the people that was here was actually my Sunday school teacher, and he and his wife are actually both professional counselors, and they came to our house as soon as they got word. And it was so painful that it felt like I was in labor again. Like I could feel the hurt starting at the top of my head and going to the tip of my toes. And I remember at one point somebody must, there were people helping with arrangements and stuff, and somebody must have said something about where do you want Brandon's body to be taken. And I told them, and I said, they can put him in my grave. They can put me there too. And I remember my Sunday school teacher, that counselor, saying to me, no, Tricia. And I remember him saying, just breathe. And that advice, as simple as it is, has been so life-saving over the past year. Just breathe. Because when there are times that I cannot do any of these other things that I've just sat here and told you that I try to do and that I'm recommending to other people that they do when they're grieving, there are times that it gets so bad that you can't. I just remember those two words, just breathe. And I would be remiss if I didn't say, if it ever gets so bad that you can't, you know, you feel like you just can't go on, please, please seek help from someone else. You know, go to a pastor, go to a counselor, call a crisis hotline. Because, you know, sometimes it does. It gets that rough. But those are the six things that have been very practical tips and for me to remember while I'm going through this.
So beautiful. They're so good. And you also have some tips for friends and family of those who are grieving. And I know just from experience that it's very difficult for people to know what to say. And so a lot of people don't say anything, you know, try to not say. But what are some of the things that have been the most helpful for you?
Yeah, a lot of people do. They don't know what to say. I know one man came up to my husband and at work, and he asked how he was, and my husband started to cry. And the man says, this is why I don't say anything, because I don't want to upset you.
Right.
And my husband said, no, please say something. I would rather be upset and know that you care than for you not to have said anything at all. But basically, some tips, you could call them the bees for people to help people that you know who are grieving. Be patient. It's every just like we talked about, everybody's grief is different, and there is no timetable. There is no right and wrong timetable. It's hard, and it may take a long time. So just be patient with your friends and your family. And if you feel like they're too immersed or they're giving up on life, then if you have to address those concerns, do it very gently and do it in a way that doesn't dismiss the pain. Because, like I said, we're all different, and it takes different timetables for all of us. But be patient and then be sensitive. That goes right along with it. We all grieve in different ways. I went back to work. My son died on a Tuesday. I missed my work. It was only 4 days a week, so I missed Wednesday and Thursday. I went back to work the following Monday. That wasn't because I had to. That was because it was easier for me to get out of the house than it was for me to stay in the house. And, you know, that could have been misperceived. People could have seen that as a lack of caring, but they had no idea what it was. It was me running away is what it was. So be sensitive. Be sensitive to the way that we all grieve differently, you know, and don't be afraid to cry with them. And just be sensitive. Be aware if, you know, church services are hard. Holidays are hard. So if you have a friend or a family member who is grieving, think about those things. I remember one of the first Sundays that my family went back to church after Brandon's death, my friends saved seats for us at the end of the row. And we came in after all of the handshaking, and we left before because we those things are difficult. And so if you can help, you know, intervene or speak up on behalf of somebody that you know is grieving, then by all means, you know, just be aware. And that goes back to being sensitive too. And then be funny. And I know that that's crazy, but laughter is one of the best types of medicine. I still remember the first time that a friend made me laugh at work in the months after. I mean, really belly laugh. She told me something funny, and it felt so good. Mm-hmm. So don't be afraid to be funny. And then be present. The real grieving doesn't start right away. It really, really doesn't. In a lot of cases, it gets harder in the months after the loss. So don't, you know, everybody wants to be there for the funeral, and they want to bring meals the week after, and they send flowers. Be present for the entire long journey. Don't be afraid to send a text. I have a friend who, for the first year after Brandon died, every month on the date of the 18th, he would send me a text telling me that he was thinking of me and praying for me. That's the kind of presence we need. We need people to remember, and we need people not to be afraid to say the name of the person that we lost.
So what do you do then, Tricia, when your story doesn't end the way you want?
Well, we relinquish it all to the Lord. For Proverbs 16:9 says, we can make our plans, but the Lord determines our steps. Ultimately, if we are believers, then we have to give it all to Him and rest in the assurance that there is more to the story, that what seems to be the end really isn't.
Right.
We may face consequences of actions that aren't our own, but we never have to face anything without God by our side. And the circumstances of our life may be beyond our control, but we are never beyond God's reach. And if we trust as Christ as our Savior, then the conclusion of our lives, it's always going to end in victory. And that's what gets me through. It gets me through knowing that, yes, I have to live life now without Brandon here on earth. But because Brandon and I both know the Lord, we're going to spend eternity together. Mm-hmm. We don't control a lot of things in this life, but we do get to control who takes the pen, who is the author of our story. And so even when things don't seem to end well, that's what brings me hope.
Mm-hmm. I remember years ago being really frustrated with something, really upset. I was devastated. And a friend came and she said, Marnie, your story is just in the middle. You're not at the end of the story yet. There's more days to come. There's more life ahead. This isn't where things end. And I think a lot of times just viewing it as the end is painful, just to remember that it's not the end, that there's still more, and that God redeems, and God helps, and God heals, and God restores, and that there is hope going forward. Wow. You have shared such great insights with us, as well as your beautiful heart, Tricia. Thank you so much for thank you for being so vulnerable and so available. I'm so grateful.
Well, thank you again for having me, Marnie.
And you have a website that's called thegirlsgettogether.com. And I want to encourage listeners to go over and visit you over there. When they go over there to thegirlsgettogether.com, what are they going to find at that website?
Well, yes, I would love for the listeners today to visit my website. And they're going to read more about me and my story and Brandon's story there. They're going to be able to check out my blog, which has some blog some of the blogs that I write about are about grief. Some of them are just about life. But one recently that I wrote about was how to handle hardship and find joy even during the holidays. They'll find events where I'm speaking at. But in addition, they'll find a way that they can sign up for my free weekly inspirational email. If they would just click the Get Connected button that they'll see right in the middle of the screen when they go there and sign up, then they can actually receive a free More to the Story devotional guide that tells more about the women from the Book of Judges and some of these lessons that I've touched on today, and they can download and print that.
Fantastic. So you guys want to go over to thegirlsgettogether.com. And actually, that's actually an event as well, right?
Yes, I actually have. We usually, the Girls Get Together puts on an event once a year. And so our annual event is coming up in February of next year. And there's more event information there as well as how to buy tickets. So
Awesome. Tricia, thank you so much for being here. Loved having you today. Love your heart. And God bless you, my dear.
Thank you so much for having me, Marnie. And I just want to encourage listeners out there who may be going through this grief process that they just hold on and look to the Lord for the help that they can get. He can give them the hope that they need to make it through another day.
So beautiful. And thanks you guys for joining us. It's always so fun to share this afternoon with you as well as our guests. And again, you can learn more about Tricia over at thegirlsgettogether.com. And of course, she's one of our speakers over at womenspeakers.com as well. So you can look for her there, Tricia Brown. And I encourage you to check out womenspeakers.com. Lots of great, awesome speakers available to you there for your upcoming women's events. And if you are a speaker, you're welcome to join us as well. Thank you for being here. Thanks for being part of my life. And I look forward to seeing you again next time here on Perspective Transformation with Marie's Friends. Bye-bye for now.